You're listening to Social 545, where we discuss what's trending in social media and interview weekly guests. Now, here are your hosts, Saba Siddiqui and Carlos Gill.
Super excited for this show. We have a lot to talk about, and we're actually here with a special guest. He's actually below me, Ryan Pena. Super excited to have you. He runs MobCon as well as you run social as well for a company.
Yeah, I'm the social media manager for MobCon, the conference, as well as MentorMate, which is a mobile app development company.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you. Thanks for jumping on with us. Yeah, are you on the East Coast or the West Coast?
Central.
Central. Wow, we got all the time zones.
Yeah, Minneapolis. So
technically it is social 7:45
for you, right? Yeah, exactly. It is social my daughter's bedtime. I can hear her singing right now in the background, so hopefully she doesn't come out screaming.
Well, we are so excited to have you join us, Ryan, so excited to be back on Blab with all of you. We have a big announcement actually to make before we get started with this week's show. And that is that as of today, Social 545 is on iTunes. So you can go out, you can download every episode that we've done to date and check it out, guys. We're really thankful for the community that we've built. It's all been due to Blab and just great support from all of you out there. But we are now on iTunes. So, hey, what a great way to start this week's show.
I'm super, super excited. Thank you for all the work you did in putting this together. Thank you for everyone who's been supporting the show. I mean, we've only done 8 episodes so far, but it's been amazing. I think like everyone that watches the show has learned a lot. I've personally learned a lot from all the guests that we've brought on. I've learned a lot from Carlos, my co-host. I mean, it's just been an amazing journey, and I am so excited for the future guests that we have. And actually, I'll probably be announcing our really exciting guest that I have recently confirmed today, next week on the show. So stay tuned for that.
Woohoo!
It's going to be good. All right. So let's get into the first social media news. So it actually came out yesterday. If you guys are Twitter users, which I'm assuming everyone in this room is because you guys were on Blab, but they made a pretty big product change. So what they did was they took the star and they changed it into a heart that looks very, very similar to the heart that Instagram uses. So the question is this important? Is this going to actually have more users adopt the platform because people can relate more to the heart? And the second question is really, does the star and the heart translate to the same thing, right? So when you're starring something, is your intention the same thing as like a bookmarking as when you heart something? So are you going to be hearting less or are you going to be hearting more? So let's start with Ryan, our special guest. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks. This was interesting seeing this happen yesterday, kind of out of the blue. I mean, just happened. I think what they're doing, I don't think this is definitely going to be the make or break solution for Twitter to get more adoption or to keep the adoption. But I think what it means is it's really kind of adhering to the way social is today. I mean, you've got hearts everywhere. You got love everywhere. You know, you've got feels coming from Facebook, right? Which is going to have, you know, love and as well as some emoji feels and stuff like that. That's going to be launching sometime in the near future. But, you know, Instagram, you got hearts when you're doing private messaging on there. You can do hearts as well. So it seems to be just kind of the evolution of social that seems to be, you know, trying to maintain positivity out there on social and promoting positive kind of vibes. It's a good thing. I was actually excited about this, to be honest, because favorites in the past, I think that favorites, there's always just like this weird, what do favorites really mean? I mean, in theory, favoriting tweets was supposed to be what the word meant. Like, these are my favorite tweets that I found out there, and I store them in my favorites tab on Twitter. So you can go to my profile, you can look at my favorites. But what was happening was people were favoriting at replies and at mentions where people would just say something like thanks or thanks for the retweet or whatever, and those were getting favorited as well. So it really didn't have any true definition, in my opinion. Whereas in hearts now, you know, kind of think of them as likes. That makes more sense for just really giving someone kind of a thumbs up or, you know, a thank you when there's, you know, a reply and it doesn't make sense to keep the conversation going, but you want to let them know that, that you got the message or that you appreciate them. I do think, and one last thing that I would say to this is my little rant with Twitter is I feel that for someone that's in the business of trying to get your message out, I mean, I'm a social media manager. I work for two brands. I think that, you know, it's important to understand the difference between a retweet still and what now is a like or a heart. You know, if you really truly feel passionate about something that someone's sharing and you feel that it should go on your profile, retweet it. Let your audience see that versus just liking something. I think it's important to understand the difference between the two options. That was always an issue with favoriting and retweets, in my opinion, for a lot of users. So that's my take on this.
Yeah, so we're here joined on Social 545, Saab and I, with our guest, Ryan Pena, social media manager for MentorMate, as well as for MobCon, which we're going to get to that later on the show. Great points, Ryan. You know, here's my take on it. What distinguishes Twitter from Facebook or Snapchat or any other social network is the small things, right? The features and the functionality, like the favorite, the retweet. I think once you start being too much like Facebook or you start being too much like the next guy, then it makes me question as an end user, why should I really be on the platform? And I know we talked about last week, we're probably going to get into it a little bit this about Instagram starting to mirror Snapchat, but let's stay on the hearts for a second. I think it makes sense if you're already using hearts on Periscope that you start conditioning your audience to start using hearts on Twitter. Totally get it. They are one company, all in the same from my perspective. But again, it's that functionality. And someone brought up a really good point on my Facebook, ironically, yesterday, which was when you look at someone's tweet, how do you distinguish between liking it or retweeting it? And if you're going to go to the point of liking, what would make you not retweet someone's content? Because let's take into account, a retweet is very much an endorsement. It's showing that you support or you, no pun intended, like that person's content. So you want to share it with your network. So I'm with you. I think the favorite button, that functionality, definitely had a place within the platform. I personally did not use it for bookmarking, but I used it very much in the same vein of if I like something, I would favorite it. So I'm really curious, Saba, to know what's your take.
Yeah, so I've heard, so personally, I love the new enhancement, right? And I call it an enhancement because I think it's a lot more true to how I personally use the button. But I've talked to a lot of people just being at the WeWork this week about, you know, what are your thoughts on it? And so many people use it as a bookmark and they feel that having the heart doesn't actually reflect that action. And so they're less inclined to actually heart something, because hearting something is very different than bookmarking something. And a lot of people actually use the favorite, whether they go back to that content or not, for that sort of, oh, I want to keep this in my queue and maybe look at it later on. And so I think there's a lot of mixed feelings. I think overall, it was a smart thing for Twitter to do, right? In two ways. One, they need to actually appeal to a larger audience, right? So if people are reacting very well to Instagram, people like it on Periscope, obviously it's a behavior that they've conditioned them to an extent. So you want to continue that. The other side is obviously Twitter's kind of in a rut, right? Their stock is not doing well. They've really shaken up their team. Jack is back. Adam Bain is, you know, more involved in things. They have a new chairman of their board. And so I think they're just trying to make more news about what they're doing. And I think this is a big enough change that actually makes people notice, right? So Instagram people that are not really on Twitter might actually pay attention to this. So I think overall, great thing. But I know a lot of individual users who are not happy about the change. So I see both sides.
So let's ask our audience, what do you guys think? Are you buying or selling on hearts and the new like functionality on Twitter? Let us know here in the comments for those of you watching on Blab. And Ryan, we're going to bring it back to you as our guest. Are you buying or selling?
I'm buying. I'm buying because I'm just a big fan of positivity out there. I think there's a lot of crap and social, and you know, when they make little changes like this to make it a more lovey-dovey, if you will, I think that's a good thing. I think someone commented early, it kind of girlifies Twitter a little bit. Yeah, you know, I think that's actually a kind of a good call because of the roots of Twitter. You know, it's always kind of been this you know, kind of niche area where you have to kind of know this different language, and you know, it's kind of cool if you figure it out and you use it right. But I do think, you know, it's a necessary evolution of the product. I mean, it's one thing, the functionality of Twitter as far as how you communicate and the fact that you can still connect with like-minded individuals, that still exists. That's still what is at the core of Twitter and why it is what it is and why it is so popular. You know, hashtags and all those things that mentions are still there. So I think it's necessary. And I do feel at the end of the day, it's going to be a smart move. And Saba, I thought it was really interesting that you called out, you know, the bookmark thing. That's kind of what I meant to say. But it was interesting to hear from your perspective that you've heard a lot of people say that they actually used it for that functionality, because I just don't see a lot of people using it for that functionality. I feel like everyone favorites everything. And it kind of lost its value as a favorite or a bookmark. Whereas and now I feel like it's going to hit the masses that they can kind of like things, which is what they've been doing with the favorite option in the past.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it shows sort of how different people use different features. And I think there's also a very big difference in the intention of how someone does something and then the action of follow up, right? So, I mean, I remember initially I used the star or the favorite as a bookmark, but I never actually went back, right? So if you're doing something with a one intention and then ends up playing out in the next intention, then you just sort of like the whole thing loses value. And I think it's also interesting because now your feed looks different, your notification feed, where the hearts are actually purple instead of yellow. So there's kind of that product change, and I'm getting used to that. So I think anything that kind of keeps it a little fresh and I guess evolving, like you said, is an important thing.
Let me ask you guys this question. Would you say, though, that this is a byproduct of Wall Street? And what I mean by that is that Twitter is under immense pressure.
Yep.
To grow their member base. And I've never seen in the 7 or 8 years that I've been on social media as we know it today, I have never seen in this short period of time these networks make the changes that they have just made. They're like wholesale changes. When you think about it, in the last, what, month, Twitter's rolled out Moments. They're now changing some of their core functionality. They've talked about expanding character limits on tweets. They recently expanded character limits on DMs.
Integrating Vine more.
Integrating Vine. Thank you.
The Twitter polls were rolled out.
Yep.
Snapchat's changing. LinkedIn's changed its messaging. Facebook is trying to appeal to a much younger audience. So again, would you guys say, when you really think about it, and one of our viewers here, Cliff Holmes, he makes a good point here. Twitter needed to do something to become more appealing to a larger audience. Do you think, guys, from your point of view, that this is a reaction to Wall Street, and especially with Twitter, with their stock price being where it's at?
I completely think it is. I think Twitter has reached a point where they have power users, right? And then they have those people that sort of have that presence there that don't use it every day. But there needs to be some sort of change for them to kind of reach that next level. And the only reason to reach that next level is to actually change something or add something or create enhanced features, right? So you went over them, right? Twitter Moments, Twitter polls, extended DMs. They talked about character limits. They're adding the Periscope. Periscope might be in your Moments very soon. I mean, that's just my prediction, right? So they're doing all these things to say, how can we create a new set of eyes on our platform? And so I think any sort of change is an experiment. And I mean, we've talked about this in the past, right? So Twitter is very good at experimenting, whereas Facebook is good at executing and really doing the right thing at the right time. And so I hope that this is going to make a change, but I mean, you never know, right? Because with change comes execution, storytelling, and usability. And I don't know if adding or changing a product icon is going to explain Twitter better for people.
Well, you mentioned Periscope, and Periscope now is going to be available on Apple TV in people's living rooms.
Right. Yeah.
So let's think of it, guys. Social media is soon going to be mainstream media from the moment that you can broadcast on Periscope and turn on your TV and see those that you follow like you would any other channel. So, Ryan, I know you have a point of view is this a move to pacify Wall Street and potentially help grow the user base, or at least be much more appealing?
You know, I agree with you both. I do think it is. But however, my opinion on that it is, I don't think that it's the right, it shouldn't be the right focus. It shouldn't be the only focus. And hopefully it's not for them, because the thing about social today is there's so many different channels that people are gravitating to, especially this year, right? With things like Blab and Periscope. And I mean, when Meerkat was really big too, you know, there's so many other platforms, and the growth of Snapchat too, that I'm kind of questioning, like, what is Twitter trying to do? Are they trying to, it sounds like at the end of the day, and what I'm seeing all the articles where they're kind of bashing Twitter, is they're trying to, you know, keep their user base and grow their user base. But what I think there isn't anything like Twitter out there right now. Still isn't. Twitter is the beast. I mean, if there is something out there, nobody knows about it. And so my point being is, like, with all the other social channels and that evolution with it, I don't think Twitter is going to ever really be able to hit a new level in user base. Maybe I'm being naive, but I think it's more about, you know, how many active users do they have, and how are they going to build that active user base? Because there's so many different options out there for different things. You know, 2-3 years ago, there was only, you know, 3 or 4 options that people could use as social networks. Now there's almost 10. And people are using those for different reasons. And Twitter may not be for all of those reasons anymore, because it doesn't serve all of those needs. It doesn't have to be that platform anymore. So I think it's kind of about rethinking, you know, what is the goal of Twitter? Because it's not going to go away. It's just about, like, how can they make it where it still is a fun tool to use, a beneficial tool, advantageous to use, and retaining the active users that it has.
Yeah, you know what? So we're going to transition off of Twitter, but, you know, Ryan, you bring up a really good point there, which is social media overload. You have a lot of options. And let's talk about you. So I follow you on LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it, right? I get my Ryan Pena fix anywhere, almost any time of the day. So
good stuff.
For you as an end user, how do you balance which networks to use?
Yeah, so I have to answer this and kind of give full disclosure that, you know, in my profession, you know, as a social media manager, I on purpose immerse myself in any and all social networks. A lot of them I actually get involved in and enjoy using them on a personal basis, but a lot of it is for also learning how social media and the new tools that are coming out, how that is. Causing other social platforms to advance and change. You know, a good example of this is I got on Snapchat over a year ago. No business need necessarily, but I got on it, and then I really got into the way the platform worked. And now I'm seeing, you know, you're seeing video evolve. We're probably going to talk about this, but now, you know, Instagram is starting to, you know, do some things that are similar to Snapchat. You know, with stories over Halloween, and then, you know, Facebook's getting better with video and all this stuff. So I manage it because it's part of my job. So I guess I can't speak as, like, a typical social media user. But I do preach a lot with anyone that's using it for just your day-to-day personal life social media use. If you're on a bunch of social networks, take a step back and think about the, you know, why you're on that platform and what you're trying to get out of it. Don't just go into social platforms just because everyone else is in it. It should be something of value in it for you. And if you're questioning that, or you don't see that, then it may not be the right platform for what you're doing. And if you're also trying to build your professional brand or just your own personal brand, just make sure that you're in networks that are worth your time. You don't have to be in all of them. That's, I guess, our job, figure it all out for you guys. But, yeah, it's part of my job. So I'm all over the place, and each one serves its own purpose. And so I don't use any two the same. They're all different.
Yeah, those are all really great points. I mean, it is our job to really learn all of them and then kind of disperse that knowledge and tell the masses how to use them and which ones to use. I just want to welcome all of our the influx of viewers that we just got, which is really exciting. So for those of you who haven't been watching or just entered, this is the Social 545 show. We do it every Thursday at 5:45 Pacific. We go over social media news of the week and how it relates back to brands and marketing. So I'm here with my co-host Carlos and our special guest Ryan Pena. We just actually covered the new Twitter enhancements, and we're actually going to move on to a story that many of you probably might have not heard of, but Google came out with a new Who's Down. That's what the app is called. And it's really the premise is, how do you find people to hang out with in your network? And so my question really, and the reason I want to talk about this, is really, when is Google going to give up on social, right? So obviously they're a massive company, they're public. You know, they have the resources, they have the money, they have the bandwidth to do all the things that so many people could only imagine or dream of doing, right? In terms of the resources that they have globally. So why is it that they keep trying the social game, and why do they keep failing, right? And so are they going to reach a point where they're going to acquire a social company, right? Why do they try to be in the social game? What is the value? And I mean, Ryan, you just mentioned it. I mean, there's 10 different platforms a person can be on if they're not on any of them. So how do they choose that? And why is Google trying to be in that playground with them? So Ryan, what are your thoughts on like Google in general? I mean, they tried Google Hangouts, and we can talk about that a little bit, right? On air, which is very, I guess they were probably trying to create something like Blab, and they failed. And a lot of people have joked and said Blab is sort of what Google Hangouts on air could have been if it grew up, right? So where do you see Google in the mix of this?
Yeah, well, I can definitely answer the question of why they keep trying. Why is Google successful? It's because of the information that they get, through mm-hmm. Google search, everything that they use. It's about the information that they get, and they know that if they can crack that social media nut and get something going for social media on their end, they're going to get a lot of raw data about the day-to-day lives that we live. And they haven't been able to crack that. So that's why they keep trying. I mean, it's too early to say if this new one's, anything worthy of it. But yeah, I think it's bad timing, in my opinion, just because they obviously just kind of tore up Google Plus and, cut everything out of it. And with Alphabet launching earlier in the year and making all these changes, I feel like it's too soon for a new social network to come from them. But at the same time, I know they're going to keep trying, because whether it's an acquisition or something they create on their end, they got to get more data. That's how they keep being more and more successful. And social is where the data is at.
Yeah, great points. And, I also want to echo what you said. And, they're not going to stop until they make an acquisition. And I predict it. Google will not get out of the social game until they acquire Twitter. Okay, so we talked about Twitter for the last 15 minutes. I'm going back to Twitter.
This is on record.
Making a very bold prediction. But I think Google, let's face it, at the end of the day, Google is the internet, right? When you look something up on the internet, where do you go? You go to Google. So I think that social is not their specialty, but we have seen Google over the years grow to be the giant and the powerhouse that they are through acquisition. So with that said, I think they should give up on social when it comes to creating new networks. And again, guys, we've talked about it. Social media overload. Who? I want to know from our viewers here on Blab, okay? If you are overloaded with social networks, press a 1 in the comments, because I'm going to stick up my hand. I know I am overloaded, and maybe it's a byproduct because like you, Ryan, and like you, Saba, I work in social media as well. So we're constantly utilizing these mediums on a professional level. We're always using them on a personal level as well. So there's really not that balance there. But for the novice user who doesn't work in the business, how do you nowadays decide how much time you're going to allocate to Facebook, to Snapchat, to Instagram, and so forth and so forth? You throw Google in the mix. Tell me, when was the last time you went onto Google Plus?
What's Google?
Think about that. Let that resonate. Other than to just share content, when was the last time any one of you went to Google Plus? I honestly cannot remember. In fact, I will say I went on to Google Plus last week to share information in regards to, I want to say, I shared a link to our blab for Social 545. And I was like, wow, I haven't posted since May. We're sitting in November. So,
and that's crazy for you, right? Because you're so engaged in putting out different types of content on every platform. So if you're not putting out content for that many months, I mean, you're not seeing the value in it.
No, absolutely not. How about you, Saba?
I don't use Google Plus, but I'm also not as bullish on the social platforms as you are, Carlos. So for that comment to come from you has a lot more value. But for me, it does. I mean, you're a lot more consistent with the content you put out. I'm consistent on Blab and Twitter. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, I think Google has all the information, right? They have all the data. But that doesn't mean they've understood human psychology and human behavior. And that's really what social networking comes down to, right? What do people want to be consuming? How do they want to be consuming that information? And what makes them want to come back, right? Why has Snapchat been taking over the social media game, right? They are doing it differently. They are doing it originally, and they are focusing on user-generated content. And it's actually very fleeting. And every platform does something very, very different. And to your point earlier, Carlos, right, it's important that all the platforms stay distinctive in their own way so that people have a reason to go on there, right? If all the commands and all the metrics were same for everything, it wouldn't have as much value, right? So on Facebook, we have the like, we have the share, we have the engagement. On Twitter, it's about retweets, it's about the reach. I mean, it's different metrics. On here, we have replays and we have shares and we have engagement that we can measure. And so I think all those things put together, Google is actually trying to get into a game that they think is simple, that's not. And I think that's, they're underestimating the, I guess, the complexity of social networking and the psychology behind it.
Yeah.
So I actually want to take a moment to acknowledge we are on Social 45 right now is on the homepage to Blab. So thanks to all of you that are watching us right now. Welcome to our weekly show where Saba and I talk about what is trending in social media. We have a great guest joining us here in Mr. Ryan Pena. Please prop our guest up. Show him some love. And if any one of you want to join in, we're going to be chatting for about the next 30 minutes. And we've got a great slate of topics. And guys, we're also recording for our podcast, which is on iTunes. So I'll turn it back over to you, Saba.
Yeah, I just want to actually highlight some of the comments in the chat. I always appreciate when we have interesting kind of conversation that's happening on the sideline. We have Ad Hutchinson. Let's see what his first name is. Andrew, he says, Twitter will have a bit longer under Dorsey before their price falls enough for Google to really consider taking them over. Their partnership, however, makes sense for both, right? So kind of echoing what you said earlier, Carlos, in terms of, you know, the value of Twitter is there, right? So they have already kind of created this cult following of power users. It hasn't become as mainstream, right? So Instagram, although it is much younger, has a larger user base. And so it's kind of just, it's not about when, it's not about if, it's about when. So that's an interesting point. We do have an open seat for anyone who's interested in chiming in with us. We've been talking about the Twitter product changes. We've been talking about Google and like their ability to be in the social networking game. And I'm really happy I found this article and I was thinking about it. And I was like, you know, this is something that people don't talk about as often, right? We're always talking about all the channels that are really popular, but we never talk about sort of why the other ones are not doing so well, right? Someone in the chat, Jay McKinney, says, you know, not sure what the benefits of G Plus is, right? Google's track record is it will kill Twitter. Interesting. So if you guys want to call in and chime in and meet all of us, please feel free to do so. We have Kasim coming in.
What's up, Kasim?
Hey. Hello.
Kasim, what's happening? Welcome to Social 545.
Thanks. What are you guys up to? What's the discussion?
We are talking about Google came out with a new social platform or an app called Who's Down. And we're talking about, you know, Google has been trying to get into the social networking game. Why does it continue to make efforts towards this? And will they ever be successful?
And what's your thought on it?
Well, we kind of already went through that. I'm not going to go over it again.
Fair enough.
But if you have thoughts,
So Kasim, are you buying in on Google as a platform for social networking, or do you have another favorite out there?
So, I mean, when we say Google, we're strictly talking about Plus, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because now that's an important distinguishing point, because now that Google sort of decided to separate themselves into different companies. I'm a huge fan of Plus over Facebook in terms of the user experience and the functionality that it has. I've never been able to understand why they haven't been able to infiltrate, the social networking space. I love the features. I love like the Hangout ability to like just easily take your social network and just hop into a conversation. Personally, I'm a product person, so I don't think that it's missing anything. What I do think it's missing is that head start that Facebook managed to have over Google. B, understanding what is that users want these days. Mm-hmm. So obviously you have all these other tools, like Instagram became big over time. And now they've decided to allow more functionality of sharing pictures and stuff within the app, mm-hmm. getting down to actually improving on the chatting features and stuff. So understanding the users is like a key important thing. What I think Google Plus did was just they reinvented the wheel in terms of like matching it up with the abilities of allowing users to talk to each other and engage with each other, similar to what Facebook was doing. But what they missed out on was understanding what is that users want next and, you know, taking the lead in that. That's why they're just playing catch up.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, you know, and first time in a very long time that I hear that someone, I think first time ever, they hear someone say that they prefer Google Plus over Facebook. So
any day, if I had all my users in Google Plus and they used it, like, I would dump Facebook overnight.
And that's mainly because of the interface. Like you were saying, you made a key point there that the interface is what really gets you there, and the capabilities, the possibilities with that interface. So I would agree with that. I've always been really impressed with the interface. And I'm not talking about Hangouts. I'm talking about the actual social network piece of it. Right. And actually, that also caused Facebook to evolve, because the edit feature always existed in Google Plus, and that caused Facebook to launch an edit feature with posts. And I'm sure Facebook will eventually launch something where you can bold and italicize. Like, there's a lot of technical things that you can do in posts, in addition to using hashtag searches and things that you can do on Twitter. So it's kind of like taking the best of both, and giving a really good interface. But to your point, to everyone's point, nobody's using the damn thing. So that's why it's
right. And that's foolish. Really kind of the heartbeat of a social platform, right? So they're not selling a product, they're not giving you a service. Their success is really based on the user experience. I want to highlight one of the comments in the chat. Nathan Bigham says, Google search has limited reach. Search, especially on mobile, is decreasing. Folks use app, not search on mobile. As mobile usage grows, desktop search decreases. To capture eyeballs, they need to own social, which I think is a really, really great point. Kasim, I want to thank you for calling in. I want to rotate the seat, get some more viewers, but I'm glad that you tuned in.
Thank you.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think that we would talk about Google Plus on Social 545, but I will say that one of the features I do like, going back to Kasim's earlier point, if Facebook was more like Google Plus, hey, what's happening, Austin, is the fact that you have circles. So you have groups, you can share those circles, and then you can notify by email those circles. I think that, in my opinion, is a solid feature, and it would be nice if you could do it on Facebook. So I'll get off my soapbox. Austin, welcome to Social 545.
Hey, so if we're talking about Google, and I wanted to go on that point earlier about the lower...
Hold on, pause. Can everyone just give Austin some props, because Gary Vaynerchuk is in his profile picture? Let's just prop bomb him for a few seconds.
Appreciate it. Gary's the man.
Banner Nation in the house.
I was supposed to go to Vayner today.
Were you? Nice.
I'm in New York. Yeah, I'm in New York. Anyways, I'm sorry. I cut you off. Please go ahead.
No worries. I'm actually just leaving New York. We should have got together sooner. I'm sorry.
I'm going to be around till tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. if you're going to be here.
Yeah, let's do a last minute meetup. I'm moving to Santa Barbara, California tomorrow. So
okay, let's do it. Okay, just hit me up on Twitter after this.
Will do. So if we want to talk about social media and Google, Google has to be very cautious within the next 18 to 24 months of losing a huge portion of its search functionality to Pinterest. Pinterest is becoming a phenomenal platform for search. It's becoming a visual search engine, and I would make a bet that they're going to take a nice chunk out of Google. I've been doing a lot of their advertising with their promoted pins, and the power behind it and the targeting is clutch. Very simply, I'm driving traffic to my website for 10 to 30 cents a click, and I'm only paying for the clicks. I'm not paying for the impressions, unlike other social medias like Facebook, where they charge you for impressions, which is phenomenal because then you can see if a pin works well or not according to your demographic and not have to pay if you're terrible at it. But the nice thing too is you get repins and likes automatically, even though you're running a traffic campaign. And what ended up happening is I was testing this, I ran one pin, it was only for traffic, ended up getting 70 repins, stopped all advertisements, see what happened. In the course of a month, it got up to 135 repins, and I'm still getting traffic to my website. That is so phenomenally powerful, especially compared when you think of Google, right? Once you stop doing pay-per-click, you drop like the next day. Whereas in Pinterest, it's still rolling. That is so interesting to me, and I really think they're going to win Pinterest.
So what type of content are you putting, though, on Pinterest?
Pinterest, with their rich pins that they've enabled, you can sell straight on Pinterest, and you can generate awesome content. So I go to landing pages for information products. I go to blog articles to drive traffic. You know, you can sell products right on there. And Pinterest doesn't take any commission. So like, let's say you have a dress, for example, because you're an e-commerce store, for $57. You put it up there, people can purchase it, and they're not going to take any money out of your pocket, which is awesome.
That's interesting. I don't know too much about Pinterest, but I do know that their search capability for visual content is absolutely insane. And I'm not a personal user of the platform, but when you talk to power users and the amount of discoverability and the time that they spend looking for products on there is absolutely insanity, right? So they are spending hours and hours and hours, not only trying to find content that they like, but to create these boards, right? And to organize and to curate so meticulously. And so the value for someone that is actually looking to plan their wedding, right? Plan their bachelorette party, plan their baby shower is enormous. And obviously their big target audience is moms, right? So the 25 or not moms as well as younger women, but that is like a huge play for e-commerce, right? That's where women buy things. That's where they're engaging. That's where they're showing their friends. I can't think of how many times my friends send me something from Pinterest, right? That's where they go to find things. I mean, it's not Google Images anymore because it's not indexed correctly, right? You're not finding the best quality content. So it's interesting that the Google Plus kind of geared towards Pinterest, because I don't think we've talked about Pinterest much on this show. And I think Pinterest is a very solid platform.
Ryan, are you a pinner?
Yeah, I am. For business purposes, I am. So someone commented before, like it's for recipes and home improvements and things like that. And it's not. It was in the beginning, but it's totally evolving. And so again, for those that are just joining, I'm in the tech space. So I work for a mobile app development company. I work for a mobile conference, and we're using Pinterest. Why are we using Pinterest? Well, we're tying in our blogs to Pinterest. So we always have in our blogs that are you know, mainly technical and about development, app development, web development. We have visuals, you know, that kind of start out the blog. A really nice visual. It's got a artistic look to it or whatever, and it's good for something like Pinterest. But what we see is it's actually improving our SEO. We always pin our blog post image to that and tie it to the actual blog post. And we're also finding lift whenever we adhere to the mass audience on Pinterest. So we are very, very proud of our Women in Tech movement that we're doing in my organization. So whenever we post something about women in tech, that just blows up. It's not necessarily about the repins per se. It's about the fact that we're seeing in HubSpot, where we get our analytics coming in from Google Analytics, we're seeing actual like ebook downloads and things like that that stemmed originally from Pinterest. So, wow. You know, to your point, Austin, you know, don't be naive out there about Pinterest. It's not the end all be all, but it's a solution that you guys should be exploring for your business needs. Don't second guess it, because you're right. It's a visual search. It's a great way to summarize it.
Yeah.
You guys are making a believer out of me, and I know we have other folks here in the chat that they're going to go back to Pinterest as well.
Yeah, I might actually try it out again, even though I've tried to stay away because there's just too many. But Austin, now that we have you kind of in the room, what I'm curious to know, I mean, I know we already talked about it in the beginning, but your thoughts on the recent change from stars to hearts, really quick, just a couple minutes, because we've already covered it. I'm just really curious what your thoughts are.
So my thoughts are, I listen to people smarter than me. Gary Vaynerchuk is definitely down with it. And Brian Fonzo, who I'm a big fan of and I believe is a very smart social media guy, also is down with it. You know, even though it's a cosmetic change, I think they're both correct in the sense that it's Twitter's finally trying to evolve. I don't believe Twitter is a major player when it comes to social media, because it's now a push mechanism. It's where people put their blog articles and hope people click. It's not so much for conversation anymore, which disappoints me. But I think with mentions, I think with Periscope, and I think with these changes, they're going back to that platform of where we can re-engage in conversation, and things like Blab extremely help on that. And that's really where it needs to go again, because the engagement, the communication allows you to push effectively and get more traffic to your website.
Yeah. Since you brought up engagement, what are your thoughts on, obviously Periscope is very engagement heavy and engagement, you have to have engagement for it to make sense, right? And so what are your thoughts on them? How well have they basically linked these two platforms? And do you think if they did a better job at promoting Periscope, it would actually come back into the feedback loop and people would end up on Twitter and have increased engagement? Because personally, I wasn't a huge Twitter user. I didn't see a lot of Twitter engagement until I started doing Periscope, until I started doing Blab. And I would promote it on Twitter and then move the audience to a live streaming platform where I could live on video, engage with them, bring them into the room. So what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, how can both these platforms leverage that to enhance their reach?
So the one thing I think Periscope really could do to improve in that engagement realm is actually take a page from Meerkat's book. Meerkat, one of the reasons I fell in love with it in the beginning is because every time I made a post, like a stream on Meerkat, any retweets, any favorites, any comments went into my Twitter stream, and then I could follow up and I could build relationships on Twitter using Twitter's native platform, especially Twitter video, which I'm a huge proponent of. If Periscope allowed that ability, even if it was like, hey, do you want this fed into your Twitter stream or not, like a checkbox, that would be huge. Past that, the tools out there that are coming out like Fullscope and Catch's ability to target on Twitter are allowing that engagement to happen. Plus, let's just be honest, getting people to retweet your thing over and over and over again, you know, asking people to share it and then putting it out to Twitter means you can follow up. So I love Periscope for the engagement. I also love it because every single time you're on Periscope, you have the ability to do a sale, mm-hmm. right? The point of a salesman is to get in front of the target market and just pitch. Right? This is why I'm valuable. This is what need I can solve. So every time you're on there, you're doing a soft pitch, even though you're just maybe giving four tips to be better on Twitter or something like that, but you're showcasing your knowledge and your expertise.
Yeah, that's really true. I want to highlight a comment that Karen made, and I've heard from a lot of other people. And I mean, I know my Twitter has exponentially grown since I have started my shows on Blab. But even before that, I was looking for a way to humanize my Twitter more, right? So let's say I followed Ryan and I followed Austin, right? And even Carlos, right, following him. Okay, it's great, but how do you translate that into real time? And so Karen says, I'm going back to Twitter to connect to people I meet on Blab since we can't message on here. Hadn't been using Twitter in years, but I'm now back every day, which is yep. such an incredible thing to say. And I think that's true for a lot of people, right? They don't know. And that kind of goes back to the point of like cross promotion and how you're using different social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get too deep into that conversation, but you have to be using things complementary to each other to actually optimize your reach, right? So you can't just use things in a vacuum and expect huge results.
Yeah. You know, to that point, Sabi, you got to think this is one universe that we're living in. Right. And these tools that we're using, stop thinking of them as social media networks. Look at them as resources that just bridge us together. So, you know, Ryan's there nodding his head. Austin's nodding his head. I can be friends with you guys, connected to you everywhere. At the end of the day, we have a relationship with each other. So these tools are just the bridge that's going to help us communicate and engage. So, you know, Austin, thank you so much for dropping by. Like, for example, you're a guy now that I'm going to go off on Twitter. I'm going to follow and I'm going to engage with you.
Yeah,
because we've done this.
Where did this guy come from? Like, yeah,
it's
awesome.
Like, where have you been hiding? Like, right?
Heck.
Can I drop one more knowledge bomb about Pinterest, which I just found out a few days ago? One of the best things you can do to up your results if you want to do Pinterest is actually get people pinning from your website to Pinterest. They don't actually care how many repins you have. You could have like 2,000 repins. Right. But if you have lots and lots of people pinning from various IP addresses onto their boards from your website, that's actually how they're ranking their algorithm, whether or not a pin is good, because it's the only organic and like non-corruptible way, because you actually have to get real traffic outside of Pinterest to come in. So if you guys are looking at like growing your Pinterest following, what you want to do is go follow, like pin from people's websites and get them to pin from your website, and your account's going to skyrocket.
Carlos, looks like we're going to be having a Pinterest show very, very soon.
You know, I was going to say, it's only fitting that it is Thursday. It's Throwback Thursday. We've talked about Pinterest, Google+, there's a little meerkat. I almost feel like we're going to round out the show talking about MySpace.
Let's do it, man.
It's coming back. I'm just kidding.
You know, I love, you know what? MySpace was sort of that... that entry-level drug, right? So it's kind of the drug that kind of gets you in there. I remember doing those surveys, putting them out, making sure people were filling them out. That was so exciting, right? You would see conversations of people. So I think that was what really started it, right? Having that top friends, that obsession with, is someone on my top 8? Is someone on my top 16? How do I customize my page, right? I mean, I remember I would spend hours on PhotoBucket trying to find the right images to make sure I have the perfect breaks, right? Perfect images, centering things. I had to learn HTML at the age of 14. I mean, it was rough, right? So, I mean, all these little behaviors end up somewhere, right? And I would have never thought 10 years down the line, there would be a huge, like Carlos said, universe, right? Where we're actually using all these different platforms in different ways. And we're figuring out how to cross promote and cross leverage and cross optimize even our reach. So it's definitely an exciting space.
Story. You guys want some real talk? I actually met my wife through MySpace.
So we are going to say
MySpace was the original Tinder.
So, yeah, you know, actually, we met on AOL way back in the day, and then we wound up reconnecting through MySpace. She was one of my friend's top 8. So, again, you look at the top friends back then, and it was like, oh, wow, she's cute. Let me hit her up. So, true story, and I've been married almost 10 years thanks to MySpace connection.
Wow.
Let
somebody else come in. It was nice connecting with all of you guys.
Thanks for dropping in, Austin.
Awesome. Thanks, Austin. Awesome.
So just a quick little plug. So for those of you who are not here at the beginning of the show, we had an exciting announcement, and our Social 545 podcast actually hit the iTunes store today. Carlos did an amazing job going through that whole process. We are on our 8th episode tonight. We've had we have had amazing guests. We are going to have an amazing guest. I just dropped the link in the chat. So if you guys have been a viewer of Social 545, or you have watched one of our shows or are watching this current show and you like it and you want to support us, please write a review. It would really, really help us. We really want to get on new and noteworthy. So that's just my little plug, my tiny little ask during this hour.
So Tim says here, there will be kids who are fondly told stories about how their parents met on Tinder.
Yep. I mean, I have a friend who is actually getting married. She's married, not getting married. She got married to someone she met on Tinder. So, I mean, things have changed, right? The world is evolving and the way we connect has definitely transformed.
So going back to social media, we got about 9 minutes left. We got great guest with us, Ryan Pena. You know, let's deviate from the script for a moment. Let's talk about your conference that you have coming up, Ryan. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So thanks. So I, for those that are just joining in, I'm a social media manager and I manage a mobile conference called MobCon, short for mobile conference. So if you check out on Twitter and everywhere, hashtag MobCon, you're going to see a lot of activity, but it's just starting because our conference is about a week and a half. It's the 17th and 18th of this month. It's in Minneapolis. And it is, we've been doing this for many years, but this is the first one that I'm actually going to be running on the social media side because I joined this organization earlier in the year. I left higher ed, went to this space, which is really my passion. I love technology. So anyway, this is about mobile minds. This is a conference for, you know, marketers, for developers, for startups. Everyone kind of comes in and there's some amazing brands that come out and talk about their secret sauce to mobile marketing. You know, whether it's social media, whether it's mobile apps, wearables, and how they're using that to maintain and retain customers and get new ones. So we've got companies, you know, like Target, Fitbit, Mashable, BuzzFeed, IBM. I mean, I could go on and on. Microsoft. They're keynoting. They're speaking. About 50% of our speakers are women, which is a huge movement that we're working on. I mentioned that earlier, women in tech. We want to make sure that is something that we you know, give them the stage to show what they're doing. I mean, one of the founders of the Cartwheel app, one of the creators of the Cartwheel app for Target is speaking. So really exciting stuff. But as far as what I'm doing there, I'm promoting the conference like this, getting the hashtag coverage going. And I also want to give people that can't make it to Minneapolis, I want to give them something that they haven't really experienced much from a conference standpoint. And that's going to be, we're going to be doing some live streaming there with Periscope. We're going to be doing some live streaming with Blab. But on top of that, we actually have the CEO and founder of Blab, Sean, that's actually speaking at the conference as well. Thanks to Carlos Gill and his amazing networking abilities. He got me connected to him, and Sean was all about going to this conference and sharing knowledge about disruption in the tech space. So Sean knows all about that. He's been in the startup world and creating amazing things for many, many years, and this is a huge success. So we were able to get him, I don't know how, but we're able to get them at the conference, and that's going to blow up. So expect to see the founder of this platform hosting Blabs out there in about a week and a half, as well as us. But we are going to be bringing behind the scenes coverage through Periscope and Blab. We're going to be interviewing live speakers before they go up on stage, kind of finding out what they're going to talk about, what the secrets are. We're going to get audience reactions. So really, people that can't attend the conference are going to be getting some really unique audience speaker reactions and behind the scenes stuff that I'm hoping that by following the hashtag, by following Blab, or by following MobCon on Blab, following MobCon on Pinch or Periscope, we're out on all of those channels, that you guys are going to get a real treat as far as what's going to be happening in 2016 and beyond for mobile strategy. So stay tuned, 17th and 18th. If you guys want to learn more, look for mobcon.com/US and you'll find out all the information about the conference, who's speaking, and let me know if you guys have any questions at all, because I'm excited about it. It's going to be a blast.
And if you're going to Minneapolis, make sure that you bring a coat, because it tends to get just a little chilly.
Yeah.
this time of year out in Minneapolis. So we got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to turn it back to my co-host, Saba. Bring us home with one quick topic that we can close out the show on. No pressure.
No pressure. I want to quickly talk about Twitter polls. And I think that there's a huge value for all of you guys who are watching just to quickly take a pulse of your audience, right? Whether it be, you know, what is your favorite social media podcast, right? What is your favorite Instagram account to follow? Who is your favorite Snapchat account? What is your favorite headline for this, right? I would encourage everyone to use the Twitter polls and experiment with them, right? I recently read an article today about all the different ways that brands are going to start to use this. And so, you know, start figuring out different ways to use the Twitter functionalities that have been enabled. If you guys are not on Periscope, start Periscoping and broadcasting, putting out content out there. You know, favorite things. Ask your followers, what do you think about the favorites? The heart button, you know, engage. And so it's not really news, but it is news in terms of it's a new functionality. And whenever something is new, there's kind of this learning curve. And so I think if you're early on the ball, you come with a big advantage. And I mean, Carlos, like, what are your thoughts on how brands can use Twitter polls? Because I'm sure you guys will be using it at some point.
You know, it's interesting. So I've had access now to Twitter polls for a couple of weeks, and I have yet to launch a poll. And it's one of those things that I keep going back and forth. Like, what do I ask? What do I say? And it's crazy because I ask questions all day on Twitter. You know, I'll poll indirectly my community and ask them. So I think from a brand standpoint, it's a great way to measure sentiment. And I think in the consumer realm, having previously worked in social media and grocery and in retail, you have a lot of events coming up, like Thanksgiving, for example. It's a great way just to ask your audience, have you done your Thanksgiving shopping yet? You know, you've got the holidays coming up. There's so many ways that you can slice and dice. I think it's a great way to go ahead and engage your audience, regardless if you are a brand or if you are an individual. Just have the right question.
Right. Yeah. And actually there's a question about the question of polls, and it says it has to be a yes or no answer. And that's actually not true. You can actually pick what the option is, right? So blue or red, white or black, Tuesday or Friday, right? So you can actually customize the answer. You can customize the question. If you have your push notifications on, it'll actually tell you, you know, oh, this is how many people have engaged with your poll. This is how long your poll is going to be available for. You can do outreach where you actually create the poll and you can actually tweet it. What was the two for?
Jacob asked how many choices. You have two choices.
Oh yeah, you have two.
I think that's one of the things that actually might have just initially turned me off. To be honest with you, when I went on there to look, I had a question in mind and I had like four responses that I wanted to put in. And the fact that it limits you to two, I found, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to pass for now.
You know, I think it's good because of just the attention span that we have with social these days, you know, to try to force us to be real short with it. And I want to just add, if it's okay, just some ideas for polls. So, you know, I think for any business out there, if this works, I mean, it doesn't hurt to try, but if you can get a poll out there that helps you determine what your next blog is going to be about for your company or something like that, I think people love to share their opinions and feel like their opinions matter. So if they're able to see a poll out there that lets them decide on what this company is going to highlight or maybe the next product that they're going to launch based on a poll, that'd be pretty awesome to be able to kind of actually have that in the poll tweet. Like, you be the decider of which product we're going to launch or which blog we're going to write next. That's pretty cool. On top of that, you can get initial feedback on reactions. So obviously I'm going to this conference, I'm running this conference. I'm going to be running polls all the time about, like, you know, out of these two specific topics that this speaker talked about, which one did you think was the best? You know, or something like that. Like, I have a poll going on for our app development company. Just the typical, I wanted to see what happens, but I did just, you know, Android or iPhone. And of course, iPhone's winning, but it's got 12 votes so far. I launched it tonight. So, I mean, it's just kind of fun for people to see that result and voting on it. But I think it could be really cool for businesses to get you know, decisions from their consumers and better understand their consumers or potential customers based on poll data.
Yeah, totally. And I think just to kind of wrap this up, and we got to end the show because we're actually at 7 p.m., is that I think it's good that there's only two options. And I think, you know, if you write it in text, you know, people have to click the reply and then they have to type it out, right? Whereas this, I mean, they just see the tweet, they click on it, it's over. So it is just so instant, which is amazing. But we are at the end of our show. I want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. It's been a great hour. We've talked about a lot of things. Thank you, Ryan, again, for taking an hour out of
yes,
your night to join
you,
us.
Ryan, real quick, where can our listeners and viewers here on Blab connect with you at?
Yeah, so I'm available on pretty much all social networks through Ryan Pena, the handle that's on my Blab here. You can find me Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, here, anywhere, Periscope, whatever there is out there. I'm on there. And definitely wherever you feel comfortable chatting, if you have more questions for me or you just want to connect, I'm an open book and I look forward to networking with you. So thank you.
Awesome. Awesome.
I love having me. It's amazing.
It's been great having you. I just want to give a shout out to all of our viewers here on Blab. Thank you so much for watching us this evening. And on that note, I'm going to turn it over to my co-host Saba to bring us home.
Yeah, thank you for everyone who watched. We're really excited. I'm going to announce next week our two really awesome guests that we're going to be having in the month of November and December. If you guys have any suggestions for topics you guys want us to talk about, brand managers or social media marketers that you think would provide a lot of value to our show, please reach out to Carlos and I. We're both on LinkedIn, Twitter, Periscope, Snapchat, Blab.
Google we're really Plus. Fun on Snapchat too.
Yeah, we're great on Snapchat if you guys want to add us. Please let us know. Please contact us. Talk to us. James, unfortunately, I can't let you in. I don't know if that was a mistake. We're closing out the show. I've also actually dropped the link for the iTunes review page. If you guys have watched the show, if you watch this show, please drop a review. We'd really, really appreciate it. The support means a lot to us. So thank you, everyone. We are out. Episode 8 of Social 545.
You've been listening Peace. To Social 545. Be sure to tune in weekly to stay in the know of what's trending in social media.